Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. One of the blessings of studying in Rome was the rich encounter with history, with ancient world history. For example, when I studied the catacombs in my archaeology class, we met underground in the network of tunnels that formed one of the catacombs, the hidden burial places for Christians. When we learned about the Roman Senate, we visited the ruins of the Roman Forum. When talking about the triumphs of the Caesars, we could point to the monuments they erected detailing their victories as we walked to class. The Caesars were not always part of Roman life. For nearly 500 years, Rome was a republic. While popular elections were held, the republic was not a democracy, but an oligarchy with a small number of families holding most of the important offices, all of which were overseen by the Senate. Towards the end of the republic, power became located more and more with a few leaders who ignored constitutional restraints on their powers and their tenure. Some of these leaders began to claim a special relationship with the gods. Conflicts ensued. Eventually, after Julius Caesar triumphed over his rivals, the people began to speak of him as divine. His image was carried with those of other gods. A house was built for him like a temple, and a priest was ordained to serve him. Divus Julius, God Julius, became his title. And even though he was killed by men seeking to save the republic from imperial rule, his adopted son Octavian, with the title Son of the Divinity, became the first Roman emperor and the first in the line of Caesars to be worshipped as a god while he was still living. This became a requirement for everyone living in the Roman Empire. Caesar was a god, and everyone living under him owed him everything. He was their lord and emperor, their god and their Caesar. The success of Rome depended upon him. Worshipping him was your duty as a grateful and faithful subject or citizen. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's, was not just a clever, pithy response stating what we all know, church and state are separate. No, Christ's words were an affront to the political order. Thus far may Caesar go and no farther. The state or government has a role to play, but it is not all-encompassing. Yet this was not some kind of simple church-state separation. Jesus unveiled the deception that Caesar, that your government, can provide the fullness of life for which the human heart longs. Caesar is not a god. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. They're not one and the same thing. By so doing, Jesus provided a realistic warning to people of all times. Don't look to the state to fulfill all your expectations. That's a burden it cannot carry. And get this, by spelling out the limits of the government, this is Caesar's, this is not, Jesus clearly is communicating that the government is not qualified to speak on every subject. Do you see this? Jesus created space for conscience, for personal freedom, which, note, is not identified as an emotion or the ability to choose anything or as an inner voice, which is its own standard or rule. But what did he say? Render unto God what is God's. Well, what is God's? What belongs to him? Creation? Yes, creation, he is the creator. Human life, immigrants, the poor, the unborn, the elderly, orphans, do they belong to God or to Caesar? Marriage, family, sexuality, are these Caesar's areas of competence? Do they belong to him? Conscience must have something to do with the nature of things and with God's purpose and plan for his creatures. What Jesus said was revolutionary, but it remained revolutionary only because he did not advance the realm of conscience and its religious underpinnings through violence and power, but through suffering and the cross. If he had approached it in any other way, it would have devolved into just another power construct, like politics or popular movements, with success being measured by the domination or suppression of your foes. For a present-day image of this dynamic, pull up Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation hearing from this past week. Too often, one of our Catholic politicians or priests or other public figures cannot be held up as models to imitate. But whether or not you agree that there should have been a hearing, the only evidence and example that surfaced for Judge Barrett was that of a deeply good person who is living by her convictions and who presented for all to see the space of conscience undergirded by religion, which was opened up by Christ and advanced by his sufferings as it was by hers, in the face of such misunderstanding, hostility, and Caesarism, secular extremism. I'm convinced that while you and I must vote with attention to the impact of all the local, state, and national elections, the contribution most needed now is the specifically religious one, the one which witnesses not through force, but through suffering for the truth. Turn off the combative news shows. Their benefits don't outweigh the costs. Engage in spirited debates if you want to, but not with anger in your heart or on your lips, or if debating will simply do no good. Don't seek victory through power, but through the cross. Give God what is his, and you'll help Caesar attain a better state.